Hello, it's Johnny here at Talk Radio. You know, when you first came across WhatsApp on your phone, it was quite difficult to explain how better it was than just texts. But it's totally taken off, hasn't it? WhatsApp is totally portable. It's as though text is live and that you know when someone's typing there in the background. You can send lots of lovely pictures through it. It's like, well, you can make phone calls on it as well. It's revolutionised the way we communicate in a way that text is just from the year 1999. I got my first text on New Year's Eve 1999, things have moved on since then. So there is a real threat, is there not, that WhatsApp might be going away if you've got an old phone. So let's talk about WhatsApp and what phones it may stop working on. And apparently this is millions of phones. So let's talk to the presenter of the Gadget Detective podcast. And it's Fevzi Turkalp. Hello, Fevzi.
Hello, good evening.
A very good evening. Thank you for coming on the show. Let's talk about the threat to our WhatsApp rights. Phones does it not work on?
Okay, so this is a change that's going to take place after the 31st of the month. So you've got till Saturday to either update your phone or get another one if you want to continue using it. So it's to do with the operating systems that these phones are able to run. So if you're using an Android operating system, which is essentially everything other than iPhones, you need to have Jelly Bean 4.1 or later. So you remember they used to give the silly names to their operating system. So Jelly Bean 4.1.
Is that common parlance for people of Android? Have they heard of Jelly Bean?
Some people will, yeah. Most people won't care, no. Have never updated on there. I mean, to give you an idea, that version was launched in 2012, 10 years ago. So we're talking about some seriously old devices here, and that's not to say that, you know, there aren't a lot of them in use. Similarly, if you look at the iPhone, you're talking about iOS 12 and more recent, and we're now on iOS 16. So in terms of the actual handsets, now the thing is, you can't, for those of us that can update our operating systems on our phones, we should do that anyway, because the latest versions are typically more secure than the older versions. So if your phone supports a later version of either Android or iOS, you should update it. But some phones aren't, it's not possible. So, for example, if you've got an iPhone 5 or a 5C, those will not run iOS 12. They're stuck on iOS 11 at best. So, but again, those phones were launched in 2012, 2013, respectively. So you're talking about quite old phones. And of course, people are still using those, but there is an argument to say that they shouldn't be, because it's not just whether or not you can run WhatsApp. It's also a question of, is your phone still secure? Is it safe for you to use that phone online? And a smartphone, which is not online, is frankly not a smartphone, is it? So, you know, people should be thinking about, you know, maybe this will give them the nudge to get a new device. And I know money is tight, but you can get decent handsets now for £50-75 new, and there's always sort of the refurbished market as well.
iPhones, though, they are hundreds of pounds, aren't they?
In the thousands. Absolutely right. But if you want to stay within the iPhone, you don't have to. You see, you can go to Android and get much cheaper devices.
But then you have to re-educate yourself. I mean, people who had iPhones from the year 2006 or whatever still have them now, because it's like talking a different language if you go onto an Android, isn't it?
That's the issue,
isn't it?
Takes a bit of getting used to. But even if you went from an iPhone 5 to an iPhone 14 now, you'd have a culture shock because the operating system. I mean, actually, Apple do have a lot of consistency across versions, but still, over so many years, over a 10-year period,
they do change.
You know, so think about iPhone 5, iPhone 5C, Samsung Galaxy S2 won't run. Samsung Galaxy S3 Mini, those devices are not capable. But the advice I would give, you know, if you were my brother and you said to me, I'm still going to run this, I'd say, don't do that, you know, because it's not safe. That's just like driving without a seatbelt.
For example, you can, for about £75, upgrade your phone to be able to save your WhatsApp usage.
Yeah. So my advice is briefly to try to upgrade the operating system beyond what it is now. If it's available to your device, do it. And that could bring you into compatibility and solve that problem and also make sure you're more secure. If you're not, look at a newer device. And, you know, as you say, you can get them for as little as £50 or £75. £100 gets you a very nice phone these days, you know, much better than whatever you'll be giving up.
Indeed. Well, that's very good advice. Can I ask what ever happened to the iPad? We all rushed out and got one.
I love them.
Yes. Why?
On my desk.
Have you? Yes, that's the thing. We sort of started to collect them because they were never quite as robust as the iPhone, and they seem to have gone out of fashion. Are tablets sort of a thing of the past? Life on the iPad? Are they still sort of rolling away?
I think Android tablets have had a bit of a time of it because they never really produced a good version of their operating system for tablets. You know, it didn't scale well. It's improved a bit, but it hasn't been great. On the iPad, in particular in the last few days, they forked the operating system. So iOS for iPhones, iPad OS for iPads. And what Apple have been doing with iPads is quite interesting. For example, this month, for the first time now, we've seen a full quality professional video editing suite available on an iPad. It's called DaVinci Resolve. They're professional video editors that can now work on an iPad. Also, what Apple are very good at is selling you lots of stuff, right? So they try and make it so that the iPad doesn't do everything that a Mac will do. And a Mac computer won't do everything that an iPad will do. So, for example, there's no touch. But then they make it great so they work together. So this iPad will work automatically as a second screen to a Macintosh computer.
Wow.
Which is great. You can actually drag and drop, from an iPad directly to a Mac and back again. You can start work I'm running a software synthesizer, let's say, on my Mac, and I'm doing a bit of software and I want to go out to the park and have some inspiration. I transfer it onto my iPad and I continue on it. So if you are prepared to buy lots of their stuff, including iPads, it's great because you get all these additional benefits. For example, when I approach my Macintosh computer, my Apple Watch unlocks my computer for me.
Wow.
It's just, you know, these little things.
Very, very clever, ingenious things. And, you know, we thought, didn't we, with the passing of Steve Jobs, that the direction of the company, the detail, because he was an obsessive about detail, trying to make the impossible possible, might disappear. But that hasn't happened. iPhone as a product is still amazing, isn't it?
It is, but I think Apple have... I mean, look, the most valuable company in the world, and who am I to criticise them, but I will.
Please do.
What hasn't happened since Steve Jobs is that we haven't had the same sort of innovation. There has been some. There has been some, but it's been... Tim Cook has been very good at incremental updates, offering people just enough to consider an update. I believe sometimes holding back features that they've got ready in order to have it to include in the next year's model, and just to try and tease people into new models each year as far as they can. The problem for them is that in the meantime, their competitors have got a lot better. And if Apple carries on doing what it's doing with pricing and lack of innovation, it's going to lose some share. Now, Apple says, we don't care about market share, but market share affects their profits in the end. But Apple has managed to maintain its profit margins. It hiked the prices of even existing models of iPad recently, for example. Even the base level one, I think, went up by more than £50. No change, just went up because of currency and so forth. I just think that they're giving the impression of being a little bit greedy and not really offering enough in exchange, and they're relying on the fact that people are sort of invested already in the ecosystem, as I was mentioning to you, how well things work together. They're relying upon that, but that will only take them, you know, so far for so long.
Interesting, a response to the marketplace but not innovation. Now, I went to my Twitter feed today because me and 400,000 other people have been blocked by a fat dancer from Steps called H. Right. Yes. What on earth is that? How dare he? I don't even know who he is. Yeah, I know they're rubbish songs. I know some of them.
So
I know Tragedy. Is that right? Was that Steps?
Yeah, they did a cover of Tragedy.
He's blocked. How dare he? Let's get him on the phone.
He doesn't even know who he's blocked, and I'll tell you why.
Has he blocked you, Fevzy?
I haven't bothered checking.
Oh, it's time for you to check.
I don't follow.
He's only blocked. Right. And I tell you what he did. Right, he blocked one of my accounts, but he's not blocked the other one. And I am identifiable on both. It's got my mush on both of them. So yeah. He doesn't like me in one sphere, but he thinks I'm cool in another. Fevzy, yeah. What is all that about? How dare he?
Well, it's not what he thinks. Okay, so he... I'm reading between the lines because he's only made very basic statements about this. But essentially, it seems like he's used a blocking service where... These are web apps. You know, you go online, you provide them with your Twitter credentials, which is always a bit risky, by the way. And in this case, he will have given it the right to do everything that he could do. And what these apps do is that they provide block lists. So there are people who sign up to the service, the service can then see who they've blocked. And so when you sign up to service, you can see who else is using it and what their block lists are. So if you want, if maybe you've got a friend who is very hot on people who are TERFs or transphobic or whatever it is, right? So if you are a kindred spirit with that person, you can adopt their block list. Now, that block list can be up to 400,000 people, okay? And you're delegating control of your block list, because what happens is, if they add someone to their block list, your one automatically blocks the same people. If they unblock someone, your account also unblocks those people. And you can follow more than one block list, and other people can follow your block list. So it is meant to be a way of, if there is a community of people that feels, that they are being harangued online by a group of other people, the idea behind is it takes all the work out of trying to, see these people and catch up with them, because some people say set up new accounts and they do harass other people online. In that extreme, it's a sensible thing. The problem is that some people block not because they're being harangued or harassed or so forth. Some people just block because they're uncomfortable with views that they don't agree with. And the difficulty there is that then, people get blocked left, right and centre. Huge numbers of people get blocked. And in particular, by this system, people who've never followed H are finding themselves blocked.
And why has he done this? Is it obviously because he's a left-winger who wants to stay in his mini echo chamber? What's he done it for? I mean, it's a clanger, isn't it? Because he's become famous for being negative, actually. For being...
Yeah.
I mean, all we want from this guy is to be an entertainer. And even most of us don't want that at all. But I always think that when you have a controversy like this, and I think this is a clanger on his part, this is what he'll be famous for now. All you've got to do whenever you have a controversy is literally play your way out of danger, or dance your way out of danger, or sing your way out of danger, because that's what we want of our sports stars and our pop musicians. But not to create fame through this worst form of censure.
So what he said, in by way of something of an apology or at least an explanation, was that he'd engaged this service in order to deal with, and I quote, bots and phobes. Okay, so by phobes, I take it he means transphobe or homophobes, for example. So. There is a legitimate use for this sort of technology, but the problem is you're giving away the control of who you block. And his account has now blocked loads of people. No one really knows how many people, but huge numbers, it seems, of people, most of whom have never heard of him, never followed his account. Well, you could say, well, that's fine, they won't be affected. But the thing is, it is a little bit some people were finding it offensive. And it's not like these lists are, there's a sort of appeals process or, you know, some sort of thing. It's very much a sort of crowdsourced list of different, so people that would see the world in the way that H might see the world. He's using, you know, their list. But what it means is if someone is inadvertently put on one of those lists, you know, or incorrectly or unfairly put on one of those lists, then that block sort of sweeps, it promulgates through the whole system, and loads of accounts then start blocking that person. And, you know, you could say that that's a form of sort of libel or slanderous behavior, but it's difficult. Then, you know, the internet is tiger country.
It really is. And I wonder actually what Elon Musk could actually ever really do to truly reform it. The idea that he wants to make it the central place of truth, you know, reliable source of information is quite impossible, actually, because that's not the purpose of Twitter.
No, and the thing is, I mean, he criticised the old Twitter board for, you know, too many bots, and that's the excuse he gave for trying to pull out of the deal in the middle of the year. But the reality is, I mean, my personal experience, unfortunately, I spend a lot of time on Twitter, is I'm seeing more bot activity now than I did before he bought it.
Oh, really?
Maybe that will improve. Well, yeah, because I've always had great deal of time and respect for Elon Musk. The things that he's done are things that states should be doing, like, you know, space travel and electric vehicles and things like that. And he's tried to solve potentially existential problems for the world, you know. And then suddenly, you know, the guy who's going to get us to Mars is wasting his time on a social media platform. His share price on Tesla has gone to hell. It's dropped 60%, I think, since April.
Right.
And you know, is this amazing entrepreneur's time best spent trying to recover having overpaid massively for Twitter?
Well, time will tell. That's a very interesting take. I mean, Tweet, if you analyze it, is initials for the way everyone eats time. And maybe this big-brained genius should concentrate on Tesla and getting man on the moon. Meanwhile, Piers Morgan's Twitter account has been wiped of much of its content amid reports that it was hacked. In fact, all of it, if you have a look, FevZ. Piers has 8.3 million followers, but he had no profile picture, banner image or posts. Some tweets containing still and video image remained, as did records of tweets his account had liked, but pretty much nothing else. And according to reports, his accounts shared posts overnight containing false information, racial slurs and abusive messages directed at the late Queen and singer Ed Sheeran. So it blatantly wasn't him. And he won't get those tweets back, will he?
It's not clear what he'll get back. That's kind of up to Twitter as to what they've archived and what they're willing to put back. I mean, obviously, he's quite high profile. So there's a chance, I think, that he might get some of it back, but maybe not all of it. I mean, it's pretty disastrous, and this is not unique. I mean, I should feel a bit sorry for Piers Morgan, because, I mean, he's had death threats recently and all sorts of things, you know. And I think the police just said that they're not taking any further action, which is interesting, against the suspect they have for that. And this is not unique. The government's education secretary, her account was hacked on Christmas Day. And it is worrying because, you know, if people don't know how to secure their accounts, I'm not saying anyone has done the wrong thing, but particularly when you're talking about people like government ministers, you know, they should be getting professional advice. I'm sure they have a professional advice available to them, you know, things like second factor authentication. So you don't just rely on a password.
Indeed.
You know, you either use an authenticator app or use a little dongle that you tap onto your phone. So a password is something that you know, hopefully, but then the second factor of authentication could be something that you are, like fingerprint or face recognition, or it could be something that you have, like a little, like a smartphone where they send you a text message or a little dongle. You know, you get these things called UBI keys. They're very good. And more phones are supporting them now.
Yeah, so if you are a household name, you should take care of your digital security. There's no doubt about it.
Yeah, I think so, because the thing is, if they get into one thing, they can often get into
They can get into all sorts of other things, because people use the same password. Fevzi Turkalp, thank you very much indeed for joining us. Now, where can we find your Gadget Detective podcast?
Bless you. You are so kind. Thank you for asking. So the Gadget Detective podcast is available just about everywhere that you can get podcasts. So Google Podcasts, Apple Podcasts, Amazon Music, Spotify, even on the Echo devices. If you say her name, I'll call her Lexi for short.
Yes.
If you say her name and then say play Gadget Detective podcast, even the latest episode will spring up like that.
Oh, I love it. Don't you love it? I've tested it with my own podcast, and it's amazing that it works.
Isn't it good? I don't normally listen to myself. I don't like to, but I somehow when Alexa does it, when she does it, pardon me.
Are you not allowed to say her name?
Well, it's just it triggers everyone.
Oh, yes, it triggers everyone else. Like, it's a bit like Uri Geller bending spoons or getting your clock started again, isn't it, when you say that name?
Real.
Yeah, yes. Fevzi Turkalp, thank you. Presenter of the Gadget Detective podcast, available wherever you get your podcasts. And that was my demo for a voiceover. This is Johnny Gould. This is Talk Radio.